I'm staring at the eviction notice. I'm frozen, terrified. I'm thinking about Laura, my little daughter, and my baby who'll be born into homelessness. Today, I can tell you straight up, if it wasn't for Threshold and the people who donate to them, me and my girls would be homeless.
Threshold saves 9 families every day from homelessness. Please support our At Home for Christmas appeal. Help us stop homelessness before it happens.
Visit threshold.ie to make an instant Christmas donation.
Hello and welcome to the Echo Chamber podcast. My name is Tony Groves and today we're talking accommodation crisis. The accommodation crisis that has been with us has been building for the best part of the decade, but has also been exacerbated, and we're seeing it in different areas. Martin, we were talking to people like Mel Reynolds, I recall, back when co-living was just a bubble in the minister's eye, and a twinkle in the minister's eye, I should say. And he told us how these were going to become the student accommodations, the race to the bottom, and how it all did. It turned out he was right. Nearly 4.5 years ago, I think.
I know. And then when I, the odd occasion, go into your place, Tony, and I drive through the twin towers of student accommodation in Ballymona, I just think to myself, what the fucking hell is this doing?
Aspen in Ballymun.
I always wonder, what is it doing here? What is it doing?
I remember someone said if we could just get, because when the antigen tests came down to Stephen Donnelly went, well, we don't need to do antigen tests because Lidl are selling them for £3. And someone said we should get Lidl in on the housing side. Funnily enough, Aspen was a Lidl site, and they did it partnered with a developer. So it was actually, they didn't put the finance in, but they got the planning and they handed it over. But anyway, I digress. We are joined by Rory Power, who many of you will know is the president of UCD Students Union and friend of Owen Keegan's. I'll get that dig in early, Rory. Thanks for talking to us. And the reason you are talking to us is because you guys have undertaken for the first time a survey into student accommodation and the impact it has. So if you wouldn't mind just giving us your kind of overview of why you did it and first of all, why we should care, really.
Sure, absolutely. And thanks very much for having us on to talk about it. I suppose that, as you said, it's the first time we've decided to survey students on it. And we felt that if we were looking to, I suppose, put forward any sort of policy ideas or say what we need to fix the student accommodation crisis, we needed to understand the scale of it for UCD students. So we went out for the last number of weeks and we're asking students to fill in. It's a basic enough questionnaire. It's asking people about the price level they're paying, how far their commute is, any issues they've had with kind of tenancy protections. And the results, while they're a bit shocking, they're kind of what we expected, in that the biggest issue for students is price. And we have got a large quantity of students who are commuting in and out. And we also have, I suppose, the most acute issues that came through with, individual cases of poor tenancy relations were students in digs accommodation as part of the licensee system. There are a minority of people who filled out the report, but some of the things we got through there were actually quite horrific. So we just felt the need to kind of consolidate all of the information together. And we're hoping to do a bit of a push on housing for the early next trimester. We feel it is the number one issue that's causing students distress, whether it's in terms of affordability and their ability to make their way through college, or even the mental health implications of it. And that came through quite a lot in the survey as well. A lot of students struggling to with their commutes, with the poor tenancy situations, and their ability to pay rent having a significant impact on their studies as well.
And is it manifesting in the union itself? Do you see people coming to you saying that they have huge problems?
Yes. So I this is my second year in the union. I was the welfare officer last year. And at that time, it was the big crisis was students, international students coming over, paying their deposits, and then being told college is online, not being able to go home and get their deposits back. That was a big thing. And we actually had so many issues come in last year. I felt it was important to reinstate a role we had previously of an accommodation support officer. So we actually hired someone full time who looks at student accommodation issues. Her name's Aoife. She's fantastic. She actually put together a lot of this report. It's a big thing. A lot of people with poor, tends to be digs accommodation. And we also have a lot of issues with the on-campus accommodation as well. So we felt the volume of queries was so much, it was actually too much to do on top of the general welfare brief. So we'd hire someone full-time to look at it.
Just on the actual report, so it's 1,000 students you spoke to.
Just under 1,000, yeah. It's about 978.
It's short a handful. The majority of them, I'm right in saying, because we've had oversight of the summary of this, has said that they were, I think it was about only 49% were kind of dissatisfied with their accommodation in one regard, but there was,
yeah.
But within that, obviously there was, there's a lot more impact to it, but there was one thing I did want to point out in it. And you mentioned it already, the licensee agreement versus the tenants agreement. And most of them weren't even aware of the differences. So I suppose if anybody's listening to this, you want to just explain in as quick as you can the definition of both and how they differentiate.
Sure, yes. On a very non-legal basis, a tenant, you're talking about your standard rental agreements. You'll have a certain set of rights, a certain set of obligations, and it's a formalized, you'll have a formalized, license to reside with your landlord, your tenancy agreement. That'll give you statutory protections in terms of how long you have, in terms of eviction notice periods, the different bits like that, how often the landlord can come into your house. So the very basic bread and butter things you'd expect of a standard tenancy. Licensees, students living in digs accommodation, essentially have none of those rights. They can be thrown out in their ear in the morning. We've had huge issues. Like some of the stuff that came through in the survey was actually quite horrific, like landlords imposing arbitrary times for when you could flush the toilet. I had students last year who actually got literally had to leave their accommodation because they lost a set of keys and the landlord decided, nope, that's it. Can't be dealing with that. So it's a very precarious model. You don't have any formalized protections. And it's something that the legislation is very outdated on it. Any sort of increases in protections for tenants have never taken into account the dig situation. It's got an unregulated Wild West. Even if most students have a positive experience with digs, those who don't have had some really, really bad experiences with it.
And digs are kind of historic in Ireland for students coming up to Dublin and staying in digs. Has it disimproved or has it always been kind of fairly Wild West stuff?
So the big thing that's kind of impacted with COVID is the actual supply of it, in that a lot of people who would have typically supplied digs are families who've got someone moved out of home. You're generally talking about someone who might be a bit elderly living in the house. They don't want to bring someone else into the house, maybe with the perception of students being going out all the time as well. That's really deflated the supply of digs accommodation this year. But what we're finding is the most students who are in digs are relatively happy with it. And it is the lower price point. That's the attraction of it. Even if there's less security with it, you're getting in a few hundred quid less. But those who have had issues, they're quite significant. I think the main thing that's changed is there's a sense of desperation. People feel they'll stick with poor conditions because there's nothing else available at their price level. So the arse has fallen out of the affordable kind of supply level in and around Dublin. It's digs or nothing really.
Well, I mean, there is no affordability if you're a student. I mean, the survey shows that clearly. Like paying over 750 a month for a student trying to study, maybe work part time, and then actually have some sort of life. That's an impossibility unless you have the bank of mum and dad, where some people are. You know, there certainly is that cohort. But when I think about, I mean, we had Seamus Coffey on a few weeks ago. It was myself and Kieran Nugent and Seamus, and he was mentioning that even around UCC, I think there was only like four places available to rent online. Yeah. And we're finding now, because of the housing crisis, that many places that might have been student accommodation are coming back into stock as family homes. So there's less even house shares available, Rory.
Yeah, I mean, I think there was one thing that came up a few months ago when you had the purpose-built accommodation being converted into hotel stays. You had places where students were staying in the hotels and hotel guests were staying in student accommodation. Mm. So even the points, you know, about where these luxury blocks are being constructed, they're being put up in Dublin 8, places where there's actually not a huge amount of colleges. They're not being put next to the colleges because it's for my personal opinion is it's for the long-term goal of after their mandatory period where they have to stay at student accommodation, they'll convert to a more lucrative model. They're not there to serve students.
Well, can I push in on that and make the point that we saw that being the case in the IFSC where co-living was, planning permissions were granted, then they moved to change them to luxury student accommodation. And then, as you say, that's how we become these apart hotels, which is happening in Dublin 8 already, apart hotel. What's important there is their licensee as well. They're not tenancy agreements. You're back in the in that realm again. So it's digs by a different name, but it's and as Mel pointed out, per square foot, it was the highest income return you could get if you were a developer. So, you know, but it doesn't do anything to solve the student crisis. You do reference in it the mental health aspects. Are there any sort of, have you seen any wraparound supports? Bear in mind, Ireland is paying, what did Mark Ward tell us on the pod the other day, Martin? 4-5%, which is, and the EU average is 14% of its budget.
Yeah.
Like, are you guys getting any resources, any supports, or students, do you find students are struggling on, with that aspect?
I think students are seriously struggling in the internal college setting. And I suppose just the one thing to note with this survey is it is UCD students filling it out. And like you mentioned earlier on, the Becca moment, that this is something that, you know, UCD students typically are a more affluent demographic. So when you're talking about the people who filled in this survey and how badly off they are, there's also the big cohort students who simply can't come to UCD. But in terms of the internal mental health supports, you know, we have a fantastic counselling team. They wouldn't have taken any leave even during the COVID period to keep people seen. But while you'd expect the behaviour of the private sector to kind of try and extort students for as much money as possible, the universities are in it as well. And they haven't even put in the corresponding mental health supports for students. We have a huge counselling waiting list at the moment. It's been very predictable. It's gone on for 2 years. We've essentially been calling for a Sláinte Care for Students supports of investment in our counselling services, our student advisors, building up capacity. There's now over 500 students on the UCD counselling waiting list, and a lot of them won't be seen by the end of the year. That's despite the best efforts of staff in the centre. So what we're looking for on an internal level is that the model of accommodation being constructed on campus is affordable accommodation. And we're coming up against huge ideological blockades with management, particularly, that they feel that, you know, you need to protect that image of UCD as a global experience. They're trying particularly to target perceived wealthy international students. And when we say, well, we'd like affordable kind of accommodation, which would have been built in UCD in the 70s, the argument we get back, and this is an actual quote I heard from UCD staff members, that might create a ghetto on campus because you'd have affluent students in one end of campus, less wealthy students in the other end of campus, and that there's the two-tiered system there. But it's very, I suppose, it's problematic for us because the accommodation constructed in the 70s and the 80s that was affordable at the time has had their rents increased by the maximum permissible amounts under the rent pressure zone legislation every year to finance the mortgage on the new luxury bills. So working class, middle class students are subsidizing the most affluent. It's a backwards redistribution of wealth, and it's something that the universities have been let off scot-free as well. You'd expect poor behavior.
I would, Martin, I'll let you come in, but I do know, and I can't talk for, I will talk in general terms, that there are vested interests in some of these situations as well. Sorry, Martin, go ahead.
Yeah, well, you know, roughly two-thirds of students in UCD, as your survey shows, are relying on the bank of mum and dad to pay for accommodation. Now, that already sets up a lot of students who they just simply can't afford to go. And then to gentrify it even more, I mean, it takes away any notion that you have reasonable access to UCD, that students have reasonable access. You don't. I mean, there's a huge monetary barrier now to going to UCD. It's massive.
But you have, on one end, the Access and Lifelong Learning Centre, which is, you know, bending over backwards to try and break down those cost barriers of access. You've got a lot of government-targeted schemes to bring in people from underrepresented groups. And then you're placing these massive structural blockades in place, whether it's in terms of increasing fees every year, the cost of rent. Like, UCD students are paying €1,000 per month plus on rent to get in the door in the first place. So it is the government has obviously the historic underfunding of higher education has been the justification for this decision making. But if you look at the attitude, for example, from the UL president Kirsten May, she's been very proactive in calling for a universal model of higher education. Whereas in UCD, we have a president who's been calling for student loans for the last went in front of Oireachtas committee. So they're not blameless in this. And the IUA actually, I think, have been working against students' interests for quite a long time in opposing a lot of the tenancy protections that have come into place. They were came out very hardly against the rent pressure zones even. So it's not like government are primarily to blame for this, but the university sector themselves are undermining a lot of the positive initiatives going on with their own staff.
That's why when I said vested interests earlier, I believe that sometimes the people are inside the building. And, you know, I'm not going to get anybody into defamatory terms, but I'm just aware of situations whereby that it would not be in people's personal interests for some of this to be resolved. I suppose if we can look at that at a high level, though, and we accepting what you're saying, you've spoken to nearly 1,000 students, you know that nearly 43% of them are, is it 43% of are unhappy with their accommodation situation? And most of them are paying more in excess of €750. What are you hoping to do on the back end of this report? Like, what What do you want what response would you like to see, and how do you think it could be dealt with better? If I gave you 24 hours, give me three things you'd love to see change.
So the first thing, I suppose, would be replacing the licensee system, putting in a custodial kind of deposit protection scheme. That's something Threshold has been calling for a long time. Secondly, we'd like to see the concept of cost rental trials brought onto our college campuses. Simon Harris has indicated that will happen, but we want to see a time frame first. We also want to make sure the type of accommodation built is not the luxury nonsense that's been put up to date. We want affordable built accommodation, and we've got plenty of people in UCD, the likes of Orla Hegarty, who have got expertise in that nature, so that there's no shortage of talent to help them with it. Thirdly, as well, we feel it's an emergency situation. It's not going to be a long-term resolution to us, but we do feel that the rent caps, the HPCI index tying thing, that's not adequate given that the scale of how many breaches there have been in that legislation in nearly every local authority in the country. So we'd love to see a three-year emergency rent freeze while we're putting in the appropriate measures to increase supply, whether that's a vacant property tax. That's something we'd like to see as well. It's a big issue in the Dunleary right down area with that too, but definitely a need for an emergency ban on renting.
If anybody's listening to this from Dunleary right down, do you know how many, Martin, do you know how many social homes, as they call them, Dunleary right down built in 2020?
No.
Because I'm going through the figures for 2020.
None.
Zero.
Yeah.
Zero.
It's Dunleary, for God's sake.
It can't
be having people in Dunleary, sir. My God, the standards.
Zero. Zero. you're laughing and we're mocking, but, you know, sometimes class is the unspoken issue.
Oh, class is always the unspoken issue. Let's be dead straight about it, Tony. Class is always, and it's the same when it comes to a student accommodation. Class is always the issue.
It's a barrier to entry. Rory, I've only one more question, and it's on the basis of you're looking for this to make a difference next year. We've seen predictions by many within government themselves, their own reports saying this is going to get worse before it gets better. And they haven't built enough. And the only people who are available to build are these high-end luxury student accommodation things. Is there any other model, you know, that you think looked at internationally that works better, that maybe we should be actually saying, everybody goes, the Vienna model, let's get the Vienna cost rental model for things. What is there anything that you see internationally that we should be trying to magpie and steal?
Yeah, I suppose the general, the cost rental model in and of itself, that's something that we would definitely like to see replicated. But if you look at other countries that have they have a rent subsidy for students, so you have, I can't think the actual word for it, the Netherlands have one of them, that it's a government subsidized scheme. That would be valuable, but the problem with that, we would need to see it attached to very stringent affordability criteria. The universities might be angling for a few extra quid to bring down the cost. It would be lunacy for the government to come in and say, yes, no problem, we'll subsidize luxury elitist accommodation for you. So that the government investment, whether it's bringing down rents through a subsidy, that's fine. But we don't want to see it as hap on steroids, where the universities create the problem and then are funded to create a bigger problem. So I think we need to maybe take a few bits. But Scotland, I think, have a very nice custodial deposit protection scheme. That's something that we'd love to see replicated here as well. There's plenty of international best practice. But also, we've built affordable accommodation on our college campuses. In the 70s and 80s, we can go back to that model. I know construction costs have risen, but there's plenty of ways the government can go around that as well. That's not a get-out-of-jail-free card for them either. And that's typically what we hear back as a carte blanche to excuse poor decision-making that locks out students from working-class and middle-class backgrounds.
Well, Rory, you seem like you're on the right track. You know what you need, and that's a big part of the problem. Thanks for coming on, having this conversation with us. And we do hope, considering what's happening elsewhere, that students can stay in college in the next semester. We do very much hope that. Best of luck with it, Rory, and thanks for coming on and having this chat with us.
Thank you both very much. Cheers.
I would say to listeners, again, I would imagine people think, you know, I'm not affected, I'm not impacted. We're all at different stages of our life cycle, you know, children coming of age and things. All of this, we have to get this right. There's a nonsense. There's a big war going on at the moment saying that all supply is good supply. And if anybody who says it's not, you're a NIMBY. And all of that is nonsense and is distracting us from the fact that there's no, I hate the phrase, but there's no silver bullet. The solution is as many things that Rory's outlined, all of the things like cost rental. And we have to pick the pick at the seams, and we're right to pick at the seams, because the government said they've launched cost rental and they're talking about 400 units. And now we see it's delayed again further in St. Michael's Estate. And so you see all of these things and it's just not happening. So, yeah, Minister Dara O'Brien, I know you listen. So if you're listening, just pick up the phone, because we'd love to chat about how you think all supply is good supply is going to get it done when, you know, your own reports say it won't. Listen, folks, mind yourselves. Not great news out there at the moment. Hope everybody's staying as safe and well as possible. And we will be back in your feeds. Unfortunately, it never stops, even though we want to take a few days off, Martin. We just don't get a break. Take care of yourselves. Talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Tony and Martin. Martin and Tony. Speaking to interesting people only. It's the Echo Chamber Podcast. Subscribe now on Patreon.